It's Thursday, January 13th. You know what they say about inflation? More money, more problems. We start here. The last time prices were rising this quickly, the average American hadn't been born yet.
These are not things you can hide from. Gasoline prices up 50% over the last year.
The alarming new numbers and what they'll mean for your bank account. If Prince Andrew thought he wouldn't have to stand trial in America, well, he was wrong.
Going to trial? How can you ever envisage a member of the British royal family going to trial in this way?
A new ruling just set the stage for a dramatic showdown. And there are numbers to back up election fraud theories, they're just not necessarily real numbers.
There's always another mountain of clues for them to sift through and things for them to believe.
Some lawmakers are saying even if I don't believe in the big lie, I'm still going to legislate it. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. When COVID-19 statistics are cherry-picked, those numbers can tell you very different stories depending on what you want to hear.
Death rates are down from Omicron of about 91%.
Yesterday, the CDC said the Omicron variant is 91% less deadly than previous versions of the virus. That's great news, right?
We're all exhausted, and this is like the never-ending game thing. Patients keep on coming and coming and coming.
And yet, because more people than ever are infected with Omicron, hospitals are actually overloaded. Meanwhile, scientists in Boston were examining wastewater and concluded there is way less virus in the system this week compared to last week, meaning the city might have passed its Omicron peak.
It was a PCR test. They told me it would take 2 to 3 days, and I just waited and waited, and they never were coming back.
And yet, in other areas, COVID testing labs are struggling to keep up with handing out results because their own staffers are falling ill so quickly. This does not sound like a country who has COVID under control. But there is one statistic Americans are noticing that tells the same story over and over across the country. Prices are going up quickly.
These price increases are a global phenomenon, and that reflects the nature of the global challenge of coming through a pandemic.
And yesterday, we got new statistics showing the highest rate of inflation in 40 years. And so with that, let's start the day with ABC's chief business and economics correspondent, Rebecca Jarvis. Because Rebecca, like, the final tally for the year is in. Prices went up 7% over the last 12 months. Can you just put that in context for us?
Well, it's something we haven't seen, Brad. As you said, in 40 years, 1982 was the last time we saw prices rising this dramatically. And when you look at what's happening in our economy, there are really two factors leading to this. On the one hand, you have the supply chain disruptions of the pandemic.
When bottlenecks emerge in the global supply chain, it can take more time for goods to reach store shelves, which can lead to price increases.
The fact that we couldn't always get the things that we needed, that manufacturers had to shut down at times, that there weren't enough truckers to bring items to stores at different times. And then on this flip side of it, you have the consumer who continues to have an appetite. Even though prices climb, Americans still go out and shop. They grocery shop, they fill up their tanks. And in the end, that pushes prices higher, which is exactly where we are right now.
So stuff goes, prices go up, and in a previous year, consumers would go, well, I can't pay that much, and just stay at home. You'd lower the prices again. Not so much in this economy.
Not in this economy. And the question is really, where does this end?
We're really just going to be moving over the course of this year to a policy that is closer to normal, but it's a long road to normal from where we are.
Right now, the Federal Reserve and to some degree the U.S. government are predicting that this will continue throughout the rest of this year.
If you look at the projections by independent forecasters, then you see moderation over the course of 22 and you get back to levels that are closer to pre-pandemic.
These are not things you can hide from. Gasoline prices up 50% over the last year.
And these gas prices are outrageous. It's just not affordable.
Many economists see prices climbing for many goods in the next 6 months by as much as 10 to 20%.
Normally, like a pound of ground chicken is usually about $3.99. Yesterday, it was $7.99.
Your trip to the grocery store, depending on what you're buying, could be up as much as 20, 30. I've talked to people who say that their grocery bills are twice as expensive this year as they were last year.
Well, and so what am I supposed to do in the meantime? Like, are we at a point where if I get a paycheck, Rebecca, is that going to be worth less in a month if I don't go and, like, buy some stuff? Am I supposed to start hoarding gold or something?
Well, this is the fundamental problem that the Federal Reserve has to address. The Fed, with its policy, tries to make sure that inflation doesn't get out of hand and that people also have jobs. And they take this very seriously.
If these high levels of inflation get entrenched in our economy and in people's thinking, then inevitably that will lead to much tighter monetary policy from us, and it could lead to a recession. And that will be bad for workers.
We just heard from Fed Chair Powell that this is a sincere threat to the economy.
If we see inflation persisting at high levels longer than expected, then we will, you know, then we'll, if we have to raise interest rates more over time, we will.
The goal through their policy, through interest rate hikes, is to help us weather some of these storms. And what you can expect as a U.S. consumer is that interest rates this year will be going up. The Fed has forecast as many as 4 hikes. There are some out there. For example, J.P. Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon just recently said he thought it was possible we could see even more than 4 interest rate hikes. The reality here is we were in a very, very low inflation environment for years and years. In fact, the problem wasn't that prices were going up too much. The problem was that prices were going up too little and the economy wasn't growing enough. Now we're in a situation where things are growing so quickly and prices are growing so rapidly, it actually has the opposite effect, which is it could diminish growth in the future, because what happens in environments like this is people get scared. They either hoard or they stop spending because they can't afford to spend anymore. Both things are problematic for the economy.
Hey, you mentioned some big banks. You mentioned the Fed. I did not hear you say the words President Biden, right? But within moments of this release, it was clear the White House is on the defensive. We're in an elections year. Economics matter. If this problem gets worse, you know, for lack of a better term, who do we blame?
Well, you know, it's funny. Administrations love to take credit in the best of times. If there's a great jobs report, the administration will be the first to say it's because of their policies. If it's a terrible inflation report, it's everybody else. The reality is that it's a little more complicated than that.
I'm confident the Federal Reserve will act to achieve their dual goals of full employment at stable prices and make sure the price increases do not become entrenched over a long term.
If you are producing great stimulus for the economy, that's intended to help the economy thrive.
Many experts blame the government's pandemic stimulus policies that have pumped more money into the economy.
Over the course of the pandemic, the U.S. economy has received about $10 trillion worth of stimulus. When people look back on the history of the pandemic and ask themselves about the policy, there will be, I'm sure, great debate over whether or not that stimulus, the $10 trillion that went into the economy, if on some level that led in some way to this inflation, and whether or not it was the right thing to do. Of course, at the moment those decisions were being made, we were in a very different place. The economy looked like it was potentially going to be stuck in the throes of recession. Millions of Americans were out of work. We're now on the flip side of that, where there's 1.5 jobs for every job seeker. Wages are going up, and then you also have prices going up. And I think that's an important factor for people as well. While a lot of people got raises last year and wages overall were up 4.7%, when you think about the fact that inflation's up 7%, that means that a lot of people in real terms aren't feeling those wage increases. They're not feeling those raises.
Yeah, and the question then was, as it is now, how much do you balance economic growth against the lives of people, including some of the lives of people who are putting stuff on the shelves right now? Rebecca Jarvis, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, the lights don't get brighter than the ones in New York. That's exactly what makes the royal family so worried. The trial of Prince Andrew after the break.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
There have been lots of important trials in this country over the last year, but none of them have involved a member of the British royal family, the son of the Queen of England.
Here in New York City tonight, a major setback for Britain's Prince Andrew.
Well, yesterday, a New York court ruled that a civil case against Prince Andrew, alleging that he sexually abused a 17-year-old he met through Jeffrey Epstein, later known as Virginia Giuffre, well, a judge ruled that case can proceed and potentially go to trial. ABC's foreign correspondent James Longman is with us. James, you know, there have been lots of accusations involving Jeffrey Epstein. There are a lot of steps before a trial, but this seemed like a particularly big moment.
Brad, this was momentous. I mean, there have been a lot of hearings in this kind of process. You know, the audience would have heard a lot about the various women who've come forward and Giuffre's name around there. But this is a turning point because it marks the moment Andrew will need to start answering some of the questions. It marks the moment that Giuffre can start putting pressure on him to support his alibi and the claims he's made around his innocence.
She was very specific about that night. Mm. She described dancing with you and you profusely sweating and that she went on to have bath, possibly.
There's a slight problem with the sweating.
You'll remember the 2019 interview he did with the BBC where he spoke about the fact that he couldn't sweat.
I didn't sweat at the time because I had suffered what I would describe as an overdose of adrenaline in the Falklands War when I was shot at. And I simply, it was almost impossible for me to sweat.
It made it obviously an infamous interview. She said that she wants medical records to support that.
I was with the children. I'd taken Beatrice to a Pizza Express in Woking for a party at a, I suppose, sort of 4 or 5 in the afternoon.
You remember he spoke about how he had been at a pizza restaurant at the time and it couldn't possibly have been in him. Again, her lawyers will put pressure now on Andrew's team to say, well, if that's your alibi, give us the proof.
Why would you remember that so specifically? Why would you remember a Pizza Express birthday and being at home?
Because going to Pizza Express in Woking is an unusual thing for me to do.
So what's next? Well, there are a few more technical avenues he can try to go down.
Giuffre's attorneys say she currently lives in Australia, but intends to return to Colorado, where her mother resides and where she is registered to vote.
I think his legal team is going to argue that she's not domiciled in the United States and therefore this trial shouldn't go forward. It doesn't seem that the judge really wants to hear that.
A federal judge rejected a bid to throw out the suit over jurisdictional grounds.
So then what? Well, it looks like settling, and settling is really not a good look.
I was going to say, you could still settle, right? It's a civil lawsuit. This is not a criminal trial. So you could still settle up till the day before or during the trial.
Yeah, and Giuffre has previously signaled that she would have wanted to settle. This was years ago. Now, though, the sense is actually that she wouldn't. She's in a more secure position financially. And we've also heard reports that perhaps Andrew is looking to sell his property. There's a $23 million Swiss chalet that he might be selling in order to fund any kind of settlement agreement. But settling, the optics of that are just so, so bad. It just says to the public at large that you think a court may find you guilty. So you would decide to pay your way out of it.
She provided a photo of the two of you together.
Yes.
Your arm was around her waist.
Yes.
You've seen the photo.
I've seen the photograph.
How do you explain that?
I can't.
He has stressed repeatedly he has done nothing wrong. His team has said, well, no, that's not on the table. We are going to clear Prince Andrew's name. But what does clearing his name look like? Going to trial? How can you ever envisage a member of the British royal family going to trial in this way alongside names like Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell? I mean, you're going to have members of the royal family up in the box testifying to his character? It's just so bad for the royal family, and it's just getting worse by the day.
Yeah, what does this mean, I guess, for even beyond Prince Andrew, but to Buckingham Palace? I'm just trying to imagine what this looks like when the most powerful family in a country, when one of their own is on trial.
I mean, appalling. It's only been bad and it's just getting worse.
And you've got to remember that all cases in our country
criminal cases are brought in the name of the Crown. And that, to me, just says everything. That, you know, there's a sense that because of who he is, justice isn't being served.
I mean, the sense in Britain, I think, is that this is an embarrassment for the Queen. How dare he do this to his mother? I mean, you know, that's the kind of sense in the British tabloids. There's this idea that he could perhaps de-royal himself. That was a phrase used in one newspaper to try to just cut himself off before he is forced out of the royal family. This year, I should say, is the Queen's jubilee. She is going to be the longest serving monarch in British history. We're supposed to be celebrating her in June with great pageantry. And all of that is going to be overshadowed by Prince Andrew. So, look, you know, it's been bad. It's only going to get worse. You know, people are sort of saying that he needs to leave to protect the Queen. But as we saw with Prince Harry, what does deroiling actually mean? Can you ever deroil yourself? Who knows?
Yeah, and what their reactions say about the family and about the monarchy in England. Constant questions there. James Longman, thank you so much.
Thanks, Brad.
I will defend the right to vote, our democracy against all enemies, foreign and, yes, domestic.
After all the hoopla around President Biden's big speech on voting rights this week, you'd expect some action. Well, congressional leaders could be putting up bills for votes this week to capitalize on all the momentum.
It's an uphill fight, but we're going to keep fighting and pushing in hopes that we can get this done. It's too important to drop.
But the question for lawmakers across the country is, how much are voters really galvanized by this issue? For every Democratic lawmaker hearing from progressives about voter suppression, Republicans are hearing from their constituents saying it's already too easy to vote. In fact, since last January 6th, the pressure on Republican lawmakers to cast doubt on election results has only grown, and several states have successfully passed so-called election integrity laws. Well, recently, Kaylee Rogers, a tech and politics reporter with our partners at 538, went on a deep dive to figure out where all this pressure is coming from. She joins us now. Kaylee, you spoke to several legislators as part of the story. What did they tell you?
So in the piece, I opened by focusing on Montana, and this was not to pick on Montana in any way, but when I was looking at kind of our catalog that we put together of all the bills that had been introduced, changing election law, I really wasn't expecting to see six new election laws passed in Montana. You know, this is not a swing state. This is a solid Republican state. There was no, you know, talk that there was any kind of fraud happening in Montana. And yet even there, we're seeing changes being made to the way the elections are run in response to the big lie.
More is being found out and uncovered every single day, not only in Arizona, but all over the country.
There's a wide range of changes that are being made, everything from kind of small, you know, things that are sort of rolling back changes that were made during COVID, everything, including voter ID laws.
Taking aim at things like early voting, Georgia making it illegal to bring voters waiting in line food or water, and limiting access to boxes where voters can drop ballots.
Changes to same-day registration, that's a couple that we saw in Montana. And then there's kind of more what experts are calling kind of more troublesome laws that are being passed, where it's making the election system more partisan or taking responsibility away from election leaders and giving it to partisan legislators at the state level instead.
Traitor Kemp and traitor Raffensperger, treasonous rhinos, lock them up. That's what the billboard says.
And a lot of this is coming from the big lie, because people have been led to believe that there was widespread fraud in the 2020 election. And they want to see a response from their politicians. They want to see something change to try to fix that.
Well, and just to be clear about what the big lie is, like, you name a metric from the 2020 election you could use to show there was widespread voting fraud, and that metric has shown the opposite. Like, we're talking about audits, audits of audits, hand recounts, video surveillance. Like, Democrat and Republican officials have all agreed on this. Judges have ruled on it. It all points to that there was a fair election. So where are the activists getting the information that they're using to make the, like, to create these pressure campaigns?
Right. I mean, so there's a whole network of right-wing kind of influencers who continue to push this big lie, who have kind of created their own metrics. They've done their own kind of quote-unquote research.
We're bringing evidence of what Dominion deleted to the country, deleted the 2020 election.
That, you know, claims to have evidence showing fraudulent ballots being cast. And you really kind of end up with this Gishgalop effect, where no matter how many sort of debunks you do or fact checks you do online, there's always another mountain of clues for them to sift through and things for them to believe. So at this point, trying to counter it is really difficult. And Another individual who's been kind of big in this world is a guy named Seth Keschel. He's a former Army captain, and he put out a report showing that there was, you know, the number of votes that were cast compared to what was expected.
That there are enough top-level national irregularities to absolutely justify the nationwide audit movement.
And that analysis was just based on his own projection of what he expected the vote turnout to be. And I mean, he has...
Wait, he's saying, wow, votes were way higher than expected, but the expected number was just his own intuition?
He did base it on, you know, different data points that he put into, you know, a metric that he used to calculate for himself, but he hasn't shared that. And so, there's all these questions around what exactly this is supposed to prove. And there's many people putting forward reports and things like this, and they're being taken seriously. They're talking to state legislators. And for politicians, what you're left with is, how do we respond to this? Because I have, you know, constituents calling me saying, fraud happened. What do we do? How do we protect our vote going forward? And having to make a decision about, you know, are there things I can change about election laws in our state that might, you know, appease some of these people without making it so disruptively hard to vote that it's actually voter suppression.
Right. So then if you're a Republican legislator at the national level, or like you said, at the state and local level, if you're seen as not taking this issue seriously, I imagine, and it taken by voters very seriously, what does this mean for Election Day in 2022 or 2024?
I really do feel that election integrity is going to be a campaign point for a lot of people running for re-election, for people running in primaries. Voters continue to be very concerned about this and continue to have a lack of faith in elections.
There's a bunch of people skeptical about the results of the election and wanting the people inside the election headquarters to know they want every vote counted.
Voters continue to be very concerned about this and continue to have a lack of faith in elections. You know, the polling shows that among Republicans, a majority, sometimes as high as 2/3 majority, believe that there was fraud in the 2020 election and continue to have concerns about elections going forward, in particular in 2024.
That adds security to the system. And that's what we want. People have to understand the appropriate boundaries of accessibility with security, so everyone knows that their vote was counted and that people didn't vote in place of people that had died or things like that. So accurate records.
Speaking to the legislators I spoke to, some were saying, hey, this is a problem that we were looking at before 2020, and we're just making good on that. Others were saying, you know, like State Senator from Montana named Mike Cuff, that he felt he had a responsibility to respond to the fears his constituents have.
Oh, you know? That's interesting. As a lawmaker, he says, I don't think this is a problem, but my voters do. And as a lawmaker, it's my job to respond to their concerns. Like that's how that ends up shifting.
Right. He told me that he didn't think there was fraud in Montana. He didn't believe the big lie that there was such, you know, widespread fraud that it changed the outcome of the 2020 election, but that he felt a responsibility to try to do something that might make his voters have more faith in the election system.
Right, which has been how you potentially end up with a lot of these issues then in your state legislatures over the next year or so. We'll see how that pans out. Kaylee Rogers from 538. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
All right, we're going to take one more quick break. When we come back, yeah, I'll take the house salad, freedom dressing on the side. One last thing is next.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
And one last thing. If you're a true wine snob, there's nothing better than butting into other people's conversations and saying, it's not actually champagne unless it comes from the Champagne region of France. Well, in the world of salad dressing, for the last 70 years, you were able to be a snob about French dressing, too, until now.
They devised the standards that will protect the purity of our food.
In the U.S., the FDA has certain standards for lots of foods. They're called standards of identity, as in vanilla extract has to come from, guess what, real vanilla beans. To call it mayonnaise, it's got to have egg yolk in it.
What'll it be, lady?
We're going to have the French.
French.
For the last 70 years, French dressing has had its own special standards of identity. It's got to be orange-ish. It's got to have tomato and sherry mixed in.
Spicy, flavorful, one of America's most popular dressings.
The weird thing is, not all salad dressings have this rule. Russian dressing makers don't get in trouble if they're not spicy enough. Italian dressing can really be whatever you want. But for 70 years, the American government has had the power to tell manufacturers their dressing isn't French enough. So today, the FDA is publishing a new rule saying, essentially, there are no rules. As long as it's not dangerous, you can market something as French dressing. The crazy thing is that in its filing documents here, the FDA admits it's responding to a request from 1998. The bureaucracy only took 20 years to respond, which, I don't know, seems very French. The FDA should have its own rule about my sourdough bread. It's not Brad sourdough unless it's just distressingly flat, barely rises. Hey, I'm loving the ratings and reviews a lot of you guys wrote in over the last few days. Johnny from Massachusetts, thank you for the 5 stars. Versace Tamagotchi, great review. Also, great screen name wherever you are. Thanks for taking the time. It really helps out the show. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.